Now, it's no longer a life sentence as it used to be. The great resignation has reached Leinster House, the latest politician to depart the seat of power for pastures greener and paychecks larger. Is Pascal Donoghue off to the World Bank in Washington, effective immediately. In fact, he starts his new job on Monday. So another political heavyweight moving on, following in the steps of Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney. And it's not just here in Ireland that younger politicians are bailing. New Zealand's Jacinda Ardern quit at the age of 43, and the Finnish Prime Minister Sanna Marin at the tender age of just 38. So what's going on? This is News Talk Daily, and I'm Tara Duggan. Now, leaving politics used to be the end of a career. Now it seems it's becoming the start of one. Pascal Donoghue is off to the World Bank. Simon Coveney is now working happily in the private sector. And Leo Varadkar has become an international advisor. And they're not alone. Dozens of TDs and senators stepped away in the past number of years. The reasons? Well, there's quite a few of them, and they are complicated. Yes, there is burnout, the hours, the travel, the pressure, the constant constituency demands. And yes, there's toxicity, online abuse, threats, and the feeling of being always on. But there also seems to be a growing sense among politicians, especially those ones maybe in the mid-range of their career, that this job isn't sustainable anymore. It's not a job for life. Now, in a few minutes, we'll hear a voice note that Lisa Chambers sent to News Talk Daily. The former TD and senator left politics after last year's general election at the age of just 38. But first, I'm joined by Kieran Cannon, former junior minister and Fine Gael TD for Galway East, and Claire Scott, political correspondent with the Sunday Times. Kieran and Claire, you're both very welcome to News Talk Daily. Now, Claire, it's certainly not been a quiet week in Leinster House. The dust settling a little now on Pascal Donoghue's departure. I think it did take many of us by surprise. But did it always seem somewhat inevitable that his eyes were maybe on prizes beyond Leinster House?
I think it was, you know, a bit of a shock, but not a surprise. I think that's the best way of putting it, because we already had the news that he was looking at potentially going to the IMF last year. You know, he definitely didn't rule himself out of that job. It was clear that he was interested in kind of moving on at some point. And even his discussions, I think, on radio would suggest that, you know, this was something that was always in the back of his mind, that he would move on. I think there is even hesitation as to whether he would go for the general election in 2024. But he decided to do that, I think, because we did see the Fine Gael exodus, which Kieran obviously was a part of, you know, 18 TDs within Fine Gael who decided to move on. And I think the interesting part of that exodus, obviously you have this natural kind of renewal that happens with older TDs that move on. But there were younger TDs in that number that left, that you would consider, you know, people who could have gone on to longer careers within the party that decided they just couldn't do it anymore. And there was a number of factors in that. Look, it's you know, toxicity in politics. It's a 24/7 job. Myself and Kieran were talking about this just before we came on air. Just, it has become an entirely different job over the last 20 years to what it used to be. And it's incredibly demanding. And I think people just see opportunities outside in the private sector that just don't put these kinds of demands on them anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, for decades, it was essentially an unwritten rule. You stayed until either your party or your public told you not to, or until, in many cases, your offspring were old enough to take the seat and had worked their way up through the local politics. But is this generational, do you think? Is it burnout driven, or is it like we're seeing, you know, younger people now, they're not getting into a job for life. They're working in the gig economy and, you know, they're changing their mind at various junctures, 2-5 years, that they want to do something else completely different.
Exactly. I think, you know, it's healthy in a way that there are options out there for people. And I think public life in general only suits a certain portion of people. It's an incredibly taxing thing. I mean, your privacy is very much affected. You know, there is something to be said about the fact that some of the most successful politicians really allow people to come into their lives, into their personal homes in some cases, put out personal videos of them, you know, walking to work. Or we often see Simon Harris, I know, packing his lunch or doing things like that, because people, I suppose, like to see that. But there are risks that come with that, that a huge amount of people just wouldn't be comfortable with. I just think it's a simpler life. You know, we mentioned there's more money. There's just more flexibility within the private sector. It's something that maybe we can expect future generations to kind of dip their toe in and out of politics, you know, something that they could do maybe for 5 or 6 years, but certainly not something that they can do for life, because they don't have to.
And I suppose being in politics means you have to always watch your P's and your Q's. You have to conduct yourself in a dignified manner all the time. There's not an awful lot of room there for people's own personality to shine through. Pascal Donoghue, I suppose, in fairness, something of a rarity there. He was generally happy to talk about his love of music, for example, or books. But it can be quite constraining for an individual. You can't necessarily always let your own character shine.
You can't really. And I mean, especially when you're part of a political party, I think in general, no matter what party you're with, no matter how transparent they say you are or they say they are, there's a tendency, I think, to control the narrative of what someone is putting up on their social media, maybe what they're saying on radio, what they're saying on TV. You know, they're trying to ensure that the integrity of the party remains intact. But that obviously affects your own freedom and your own views. And obviously, most people, I think, will take their own opinions on certain issues that may not, you know, completely tie in with what your party thinks on a matter. I'm sure, you know, a lot of the younger TDs that are part of the main political parties have serious issues with, you know, the latest housing plan, you know, the cost of living crisis, you know, the latest budget that didn't really do much for younger workers in this country. But yet they have to be sent out and ensure that they, you know, they say the right thing and they toe the party line. So it can be difficult. And I think that not many people would be able to do that. I think it can be straining on your own kind of, I suppose, your own personal visions and your own, you know, ideals.
And your conscience, I suppose, as well. You know, if you're restrained by a party whip on votes of importance, you know.
Exactly. So I think there's all of those things that kind of, you know, lead to a person to think, you know, maybe this job isn't for me. But in saying that, look, there are like massive positives to being in politics, and people often try to kind of shine a light on that, the ability to help your community, you know, the ability to get things over the line. It may not seem like that happens quite a lot in Irish politics. The cogs of Irish politics move very slowly. But I think that there are pluses to this. I was actually talking to Kieran about this before we came on air as well. I just think that even the situation with housing is impacting people getting involved in politics, because it tends to be, you know, you join at a community level, you start volunteering, you start kind of getting in that way. I feel like young Irish people don't feel like they're part of their communities anymore, whether they're renting or they're still living at home. A lot of people in their late 20s and 30s who would have kind of started to get involved in politics probably feel like they're not really, you know, they're in this kind of stopgap stage where it's just like, well, this isn't actually where I'm going to be living. I'm hoping to buy at some stage. So they don't feel as engaged with their local communities. Mm. And I think that's affecting people getting involved in kind of grassroots organizations where you typically see people get, I suppose, politically motivated. So that's, I think, why we're also seeing an impact on people maybe joining or having an interest in politics, which is a shame, you know, but that's probably a feature of all of this. But one of the big things, I think, is what we're seeing with toxicity in politics and, you know, the abuse that people are experiencing online, particularly towards women. That, for me, is a major issue we're seeing right now, which is affecting people wanting to get involved.
And we may come back to that, but you can understand in the climate today why people wouldn't want to stick their head above the parapet and put themselves in that position. Kieran, I know you're actually a good pal of Pascal Donoghue. You started in the Senate together on the same day. Were you surprised by the news that came out from Leinster House this week that he was quitting?
I was genuinely surprised. You know, for as long as I've known Pascal, for 18 years now, I mean, public service was part of who he was. It genuinely was. I mean, and every moment of every day, he had this extraordinary commitment to, you know, the people that elected him, first of all, and secondly, to in his senior cabinet roles to the country. And that it was a hallmark of the Pascal Donoghue I knew. Having said all of that, his elevation to the president of the Eurogroup in recent years, his re-election into that role, there was obviously a massive rising of his global profile in terms of the world of economics and finance. So I assumed there was inevitability that there was going to be an approach of this nature at some point. And as Claire has already pointed out, when an opportunity like that arises, it's very, very difficult to say no.
And they are once in a lifetime opportunities, I suppose. You were Minister for International Trade in the Diaspora during your time as a Minister of State. So you would have travelled a lot, obviously, in that role. Did you get a sense overseas that Irish politicians were highly rated for their skills, maybe even more so than they would have been at home? More recognition for them abroad than here at home?
Yes, it's a very honest answer to that. And they're not alone Irish politicians, Irish people, the Irish nation. One of the things that I spent a lot of time travelling on was our campaign to be elected to the UN Security Council. And we were up against two behemoths in terms of the resources they had available to them, Canada and Norway. And ultimately, Ireland and Norway won out and Canada lost out in that race. But I mean, I sat down in front of politicians from across the world. And I was focusing mostly on island states all over the world because we're both facing similar challenges now in terms of climate change and so on. So, and every time I did, Ireland's history of conflict resolution on our own island in the first instance and creating and sustaining a peace, and then also our contribution to UN peacekeeping, and the fact that Ireland was never a colonizing nation. I remember Michael D. Higgins giving a speech in New York in the middle of that campaign, and he said that we stand on the shoulders of our missionaries who went abroad internationally, not to take but to give, not to hurt but to heal. And we still profit from and benefit from that experience. I mean, Irish politicians are very well regarded internationally, but I would argue predominantly, first of all, because they're Irish, not necessarily because they're Irish politicians.
Now, you left politics at the last general election, Ciarán. You were a councillor, you were a senator, you were a minister of state, you were a TD, you were a party leader at one point with the Progressive Democrats. Why did you decide to leave it all behind?
I turned 60 this year. And my dad sadly passed away at 60. And that was something that was weighing really, really heavily on my mind as I approached that milestone. And I asked myself, and my wife and I sat down, we had some very serious conversations about the next phase from that decade from 60 to 70.
Now, Claire and Ciarán, stay with me. I want to play a voice note from Lisa Chambers. Lisa was once seen as a rising star in Fianna Fáil. She was tipped to make cabinet and potentially even leadership of the party. But she quit politics for the private sector after failing to regain her seat in the Dáil in the Mayo constituency last year. She's been telling us today about life after Leinster House.
I contested the last election and didn't make it and decided not to contest the Shannon election. I have been an outgoing senator. And just decided, I mean, I had done probably close to 12 years elected between the local authority and the Oireachtas. And it just felt like the right time to move and to do something different and to move to the next chapter. Life is great. I work for a company called Cancello. We're a US company. It's headquartered in Ireland, in Dublin. I'm their public affairs director, so I'm advising on things like how the Oireachtas works, engaging with departments, the political system, local authorities, politics, policy, legislation. So all of the things that I love. So it's been great. I mean, I love the job and it's been a fantastic step change. And there is that probably a bit more flexibility as well. And, you know, I've got a young son, so there is that bit of extra flexibility and more time at home, which has been brilliant as well. But I don't think everyone has stepped away for the same reasons. I do think that maybe politics is changing a little bit and that the longevity that we might have seen traditionally, I think Micheál Martin is now currently at 35, 36 years. Pascal was probably nearly 20 years. We're probably seeing a shift away from people doing very long lengths of service, but I think that's just the nature of work today. Politics, maybe just because of the pace of it and the nature of the job, maybe people just are not in general staying for, 20, 30 years anymore. People are definitely more aware of work-life balance and they want to have more time at home with family. Certainly since the COVID pandemic, I think people definitely reflected a lot more on time at home and what their work life was like. But if you look at other jobs, that are equally demanding, maybe the Gardaí or the Defence Forces or, many other jobs where people, they're just not staying forever in the same job. People tend to move a little bit more now. And that's just the nature of work. And I think politics has been impacted the same as any other job, really. I loved politics and I'm you know, so glad that I did it. And it was a huge privilege to do the job. I mean, it is an amazing job to do. It's so important. It's so important that we've got people coming into politics. We need that. But, you know, definitely when I became a mum, it, you know, I definitely found it more difficult to try and juggle everything because I live in Mayo and the Oireachtas is in Dublin. So it did mean I was gone from home 2 to 3 days every week, which is a big chunk of your week gone with a small child. It is, for me right now, definitely something that I value is having more time with my family and being able to work from home a little bit more and having a little bit more personal time. And it's been lovely as well, stepping back into being a private person and having that extra level of privacy has been great as well. Look, obviously, Pascal's at a different stage of his career, and the opportunity that he was given to go and work in the World Bank is really an extraordinary opportunity. They don't come along very often, and he has earned that. And he's obviously impressed people beyond Ireland and his work within the Eurogroup as well. So I think that's quite unique in its circumstances. And, you know, I don't want to be unfair to dads. I think every working parent, no matter what job you're in, it is difficult to juggle family life and work life and do all of the things that you need to do and that you want to do as a parent. So I do think, you know, politics is quite demanding in that, particularly as a rural representative. If you've got a large constituency, if the Oireachtas is a good distance from your home and you're having to spend days away from home, that is a challenge. There's no point in saying otherwise. You know, I know that even some of the TDs that retired in the last term, some of the men, they also acknowledged that they found that challenging as well, being away from their families. So it is part of the job that you are gone from home quite a bit. And I think some people find that more challenging than others. And it is a job where you do need that support network at home to kind of keep the show on the road and keep everything going.
Claire, very interesting, I think, listening to Lisa there. She talking, and she acknowledged, obviously, this is difficult for fathers as well. But do you think the reasons for quitting politics differ in certain ways for women and for men?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Lisa was a perfect example of that as a Mayo TD and being so far away from Leinster House and the, you know, the travel demands on parents trying to come up to the city on a regular basis. I think that that takes a real toll on the lives of politicians who are living around the country. I actually recall a few weeks ago just talking with a female Dublin TD who said, you know, quite candidly that she just wouldn't do her job. She would not be a TD if she was living outside of Dublin because it just would not be possible for her. She just felt like it was almost a luxury that she was able to go into the Dáil Chamber, you know, say her bit, do her work, get to her constituency office quite quickly. It was down the road, and also be able to do the school run, and that she also had the support of, you know, grandparents and family nearby. And look, you know, we all know that the world is changing now, and obviously men are much more involved with their families, with their children. But I do think that, you know, for the most part, that women and mothers do tend to take up most of the burden when it comes to the labour of the household. That just seems to be something that it's very difficult to move away from in Irish society. And I think that's why we still have an issue with gender balance in even at council level. You know, obviously we have gender quotas now, which we're certainly seeing a better balance at when we come up to general elections. But I think if we are serious about this, and I, you know, the whole childcare element and all of that is going to be crucial, I suppose, going forward.
And on that point, Claire, I mean, if you think about the working hours, and you know, politicians get an awful lot of stick. Ash, they're only working 3 days a week up in Dublin, but the dole sitting hours are very long, and they go on into the night. There's the travel, as Lisa Chambers mentioned. Then you have to go home to your constituency and do your constituency work and be mindful of the parish pump and how important that is. So do you think that we need really radical change in terms of that structure and how that works if we're going to keep politicians in the game for a little bit longer?
I would imagine so. I just don't personally see how it's sustainable. And I think, you know, obviously, look, that's an element of the job that has always been there. But you have this added element of also needing to be on social media constantly and being available to people, answering messages, taking calls. I mean, it's incredibly easy to get any politician's personal mobile number. They tend to put them on election leaflets. You know, they tend to put them out there. So they're always on. I'm sure they always constantly get, you know, phone calls late in the evening. messages. So it's not just limited to their, you know, constituency office hours, you know, where they have like a designated time where people can come in. And then maybe they're also expected to, I suppose, do the odd social media post, you know, put up a video of themselves, candid, you know, piece to camera about something that they're working on. I'm sure that, you know, you have a situation where party head offices and press offices are putting pressure on them to do those kinds of things as well, to up engagement and up engagement with the party and show how hard they're working. I think all of those elements kind of rolled into one are showing just how different politics and political demands are today compared to where we were even, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Ciarán, you've been out of it now for a year, there or thereabouts. What surprised you most about the transition back to civilian life?
I suppose it was in the first few weeks and months, the silence. going from, as Ciarán's pointed out, being always on. Politics runs at a relentless speed from dawn to dusk. And when that stops, filling the vacuum is kind of strange. I often found myself just kind of waiting for the phone to ring, you know, wondering why the email inbox wasn't filling up. That was the first thing. But I quickly became accustomed to that and obviously filled the vacuum with things that I love doing. I have a new role around global education and a role with Cycling Ireland, enjoying those two things immensely. And then secondly, I suppose the other thing that surprised me was how transferable your political skills actually are, because these are skills that, to all of us who worked in Leinster House, be us in an elected role or those who worked alongside us in support roles, you know, negotiation, communication, as Claire pointed out, doing all the social media stuff, building alliances, building partnerships. They're all skills you take with you from that environment out into, I suppose, the public space, and you take with you. And the world outside Leinster House values those skills more than we sometimes think. So I suppose they were the two things that kind of surprised me, the initial shock of the silence and filling the vacuum. And secondly, how transferable our skills that we perhaps unconsciously have honed and developed over the years in politics.
And with those transferable skills, it's no surprise then, I suppose, Ciarán, that many of our politicians are quitting the game earlier and being able to move and transition into roles in other sectors where they can utilise those skills and probably get paid a lot more. I know there's always a lot of criticism, and people listening will be shouting at us now when we talk about TD's pay. But actually, a lot of people would be earning an awful lot more in the private sector.
Yes, a lot would. And, you know, per hour, TD's pay is reasonable. I'm not saying it's unreasonable, but it's, you know, it's a huge commitment. You're always on, you're rarely off. And we're now seeing, as you know, perhaps the most talented of those who are leaving and going into roles where they're paid substantially more. But, you know, just referring quickly back to Claire's earlier comment there about family life, I think for the vast majority of people who have left in recent times and who will leave, and I think there's inevitability around that right now in the coming months and years, it's primarily about your family. It's primarily about getting back to having an opportunity to share in your family's daily life. And listening to Lisa Chambers' piece there, she very capably and eloquently described the challenges around that, especially coming from the Western Seaboard. I remember one day when the Dáil was hosted in the National Convention Centre during COVID. It was a Thursday evening. I was having a cup of tea before I took the road west to Galway. And I was sitting beside Simon Coveney, who was on the phone to his then 9-year-old daughter, explaining to her how he wouldn't be home that night. He was going straight back to Brussels because he was in the middle of a critical juncture in the Brexit negotiations. And as far as that kid was concerned, this was just dad telling her he wasn't going to be home later on and wouldn't be home probably until Saturday or Sunday. So people forget that. And I think that for the vast majority of people who are leaving, it is for them the value of returning to that normality is the greatest call of all.
Yeah, I think politicians do get a lot of stick, and people don't really maybe fully understand the sacrifices that go behind it, not only with the individual in politics, but their families, their children, their spouses, and all of the support network that keeps them going. Claire, Ciarán, thank you both very much for being here on the podcast today, and thanks as well to Lisa Chambers. That's it for today. I'll be back in your feeds tomorrow morning, bright and early, with another News Talk Daily. Don't forget you can listen back to every episode on the Go Loud player or online at newstalk.com. For now, though, from me, Tara Duggan. Goodbye.